Yeah.
I'm
worry
ready.
about you. I always worry about you even getting home when you go out.
I know. I was lucky. Every time I go out, I photograph all the cars that are in front of the house.
Good.
Because that guy, that Vladimir, there was a SUV that had the license plate Vlad's car, and I photographed it. And it's the same guy that was, stalking me where I lived at 69 Holly. The superintendent let him live in this storage place for free, and they're the ones that stole, I'm sure, all of my personal effects, that I had there, my expensive entertainment unit, and on. So he was the guy, this Vladimir, that was the instrumental in going into the Arist household, killing that Jewish guy Ike Arist. But anyway, we'll get there. So I guess we'll first start with that Walter Tobinski. So you go into Google search engine, and it's a second, and just put Walter Tobinski, and then the second, I guess, information there. First one, it says Walter Tobinski, find a grave. Second one is profile of Walter Tobinski, so appletree.com. So, or
Okay, let me try this.
so just put Walter
Just
Tobinski,
a minute, yeah.
TA.
Yeah, just a minute. I know how to spell. And what after Walter Tobinski?
Yeah, the second one says profile of Walter Tobinski, appletree.com. So just click on that, and then we're right into the link of who his parents are.
Okay,
So the
just a
parent
minute.
is.
You can keep talking. I don't have
Oh,
to be
okay. So the
listening. Just
parent, first, it says the mother's name. She was Lena Tobinski, née Pachowski, Pachkowski.
Okay.
So you click the cursor on the father's head, Michael Tobinski, and then up comes the profile of the siblings that are from Clyde's grandfather,
Hey,
Philip Tobinski.
wait a second. I'm on this page, and there are a bunch of photographs there. The first two, of course, are from Mexico City. Is the third, or what about the third, the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth?
No, I'm talking about just don't go into images. Go into just Michael Tobinski, just in the search engine. Don't go into the images. Just go into
Mundia, Mundia, Mundia.
just go into google.com and
Right.
then type Michael Tobinski.
Michael?
Michael,
Oh,
or
okay.
sorry, Walter Tobinski. Sorry, I stand corrected. Walter Tobinski. Don't go
Oh.
into images of.
Okay, you want public member trees? Is that what you want?
Yeah, the first one
It's not the
when
first
you.
one on mine. See, that's the point I'm making. It's not the first one on me.
Yeah, the first one says findagrave.com. Second one is profile of Walter Tobinski. In green, it says appletree.com. See that? We're not into photographs. We're
Just a
just
minute, just a
going.
minute, just a minute, just a minute.
Just go into Google.
Appletree.com, Appletree.
No, you won't find it that way. Just go into Google search engine and you put Walter Tobinski,
I did,
just
Haley.
his name.
I did.
And then, first one comes, it says Walter Tobinski, and it doesn't have a date, but it says date of death 1989, find a grave. Second one says profile of Walter Tobinski,
Oh, no, it
apple
says,
tree.
I got a Walter Tobinski profile, but it's Mundia, Mundia.
No. Start again. I don't know why. Maybe I've because I've got the search engine in Canada. But try to get into google.ca maybe, and then we're on the same page. Walter Tavinsky, Find a Grave.
Okay,
is the
just
first
a minute. Come on. Well, I can't find it, but you just go ahead and talk. Go ahead and talk.
Oh, because I wanted to go through the Apple.com, the whole family profile there.
Well, you can do that.
Okay, so the first that comes is the when you get into Apple Tree, it has Walter Tavinsky, no face there except just a silhouette of the person, and then it says family and it says parent. So his mother was Lena Tavinsky. It doesn't say that, but just has her maiden name, Pachkowski. Father of Walter Tavinsky was Michael Tavinsky.
Go on. Just keep
then
going.
You click on, yeah, then you click on the head of Michael Tavinsky, his father, and up comes the siblings that came from unknown parent. The mother's last name is unknown, just her first name is Eva, so they don't know her maiden name. But the parent's name, like Clyde's grandfather from the mother's side, and Walter Tavinsky's grandfather on the mother's side was Philip, spelled Philip Tavinsky. So he had, they had three children, so two females and Walter. First child was Eva Tavinsky, and Phyllis with Phyllis Tavinsky, and then Walter Tavinsky. So when you click on the grandfather's head, Philip Tavinsky, up comes who he had as children. So they had all totaled 7. Seven children. Now, the way I started going through it, who was the first, by the looks of it, was this Roman Tavinsky. I have to put it in chronologically, so I'm going to try to do this whole genealogical profile. He seemed to have died. Where did I put here?
Haley, what's the importance of doing the genealogy?
Well, the whole thing is the link to Clyde.
Yeah, okay.
Link to Clyde and
to show that he's Clyde's cousin.
Clyde's cousin, but it's all the subsequent contract killers that are coming from this syndicate family, because it is passed on that they're the hitmen working for the syndicate, mercenary or whatever. So they're groomed, and it's been passed on. So what I'm linking in is Michael Tavinsky, how he was involved in the gangs. And this goes to Meyer Lansky and all the bootleg ongoings in the 20s, and how they're linked to organized crime and how it evolved. So I'm doing the history of all this. So that's what's so very important. So when you put into hit the head of Clyde's mother, this is what's very messed up. One of the children, Ann Tavinsky, minus an E at the end, died as well at a young age. And when you put Ann Tavinsky, click on Ann Tavinsky, up pops her children, and that's where it shows that she gave birth to two children, Clyde Forshaw and Eva Forshaw, but her full name, Clyde's sister, is Evangeline. So I'm linking all this, and when you click on Clyde's head, they don't have his siblings. But that's why I went into this whole thing of how this family of hitmen evolved into the history of working as the contract killers or murder for hire people, whatever you want to call them, have evolved working side by side with all the organized crime families here in Canada and the United States and Italy. So the next thing I wanted you to see was this website, started talking about. So I'll give you the website. It's http://www.websleuths.com. So let me put that myself into the search engine here. And then we'll go through just a few of them because it's just mind-blowing, you know, what the history of all of these unsolved murders have come to and why they've been suppressed. Give me a second here. I'll just...
Okay, I haven't got a lot of time today, I must say.
Okay, sorry. Web Sleuth. Sleuth.com. And then you put /forums, FORUMS, /archive, ARCHIVVE. Oh, God, I put that to archive /index, INDIX.
INDEX?
Yeah, index, ENDIX. And then the initials right after the dot, P like Peter, H like Harry, P again, /T, and then the hyphen, 6-3-2-7-4.html. Okay, now I'm going to put search. If I got it correct, or maybe I typed something wrong myself here. No, I did something wrong there. Let me just... Oh, I know what I didn't do. I didn't put three W's. Whoops. W. Stupidly, I didn't put the WWW there. www. Let me see if I bring it up myself here. Oh, God. Okay, finally got it there. I left a few. Okay, and up comes, it starts with the first case of the Harris family, which I went over yesterday, where Clyde had told me how he got in, waiting in the bushes, stalking the mother who had gone out with her daughter and her son-in-law to a restaurant, stalked her, and then hid in the bushes while they were in the house. So when they were saying goodbye at the door, he burst in after they had left, the son-in-law and the daughter, and mother, Celia Harris, answered the door thinking it was maybe her daughter that came back forgetting something. That's the way he got in. So he killed her at the front of the house, right in the lobby area there, and then bludgeoned to death the father and the son. The father's name was Ike Harris, I-K-E,
what?
And the son,
why was
Aaron.
Why was he killing them?
Well, the motive, what Clyde told me, he was a slum landlord, and he did it on a specific date, the Jewish holiday. Remember I told you it's all done numerologically.
Numerologically.
That's it. Thank you. So the next day is that's coming up. This is why I was trying to come up with a date with September 6th for you, that they do something, because it's one of their holidays. They're, I think it's Rosh Hashanah or whatever, coming up 5th, 6th of this year. And then the next one is Yom Kippur. So this was very relevant to the date that they were killed. And the other thing was the mother had verbally heckled Soviet Premier Alexei Kosygin, because she started being an activist, you know, on and on. But anyway, bludgeoned them to death. Now, at the bottom, it says they're Harold and Florence Fagan. That was done similar to the Ike heiress that Clyde had gained entry into the house as well, 1978. And when I went to see Detective Steve Ryan, Staff Inspector, or not Staff Inspector, Detective Sergeant Steve Ryan of the Cold Case Squad, I said the case of Irwin Harrison Gilmore have a link to the Florence and Harold Fagan and the Ike heiress. So his eyes popped out when I was telling him, because he knew what I was, he knew that I was talking, you know, correct information that no one would know except a killer, right? And I said prior to that as well, or people that were left alive, was a family by the name, last name of Engel. And Clyde took me to show me the building, how he got in, and those people were left alive. The woman, Mrs. Engel, she had her ring taken away. Now, the way they gained entry into their apartment is they posed as police officers, and that guy by the name of Vladimir was the one that burst in. He knocked on the door, and Mrs. Engel let them in, because she thought it was cops. Anyway, once they got in there, they rummaged and stole jewelry, and then rolled the Mrs. Engel in a carpet. And Clyde says they rolled up the husband, Mr. Engel, in a blanket. And then Clyde started jumping up and down on the head and body, the torso, like the person's chest area, back area. But what buffered Clyde stomping on them was the fact that the carpet was a buffer, and they were left alive. So they were in the hospital, and then they went through it. But they had very important description of the guy that was the tallest, which was Vladimir. Clyde said they went in Vladimir, his oldest son Paul, and himself. So the Mrs. Engel had said that the shortest was the most vicious of them all, because she kept, or Clyde kept yelling what he told me, yelling fucking Jews, and went on and on, stomping them to death. But anyway, stole a lot of jewelry. So he brought me to where the apartment was, showed me how they got in. So it's always this home invasion stuff. Anyway, the next case goes into the one that I went in detail with you, Lizzie Tomlinson, that little six-year-old girl that got the bulrush, as Clyde told me, that he put it through her vagina and tried to put it out of her mouth, but it ended up lodged the bulrush in her shoulder. Yeah. So it's horrific. Like, he brought me to the area, relived this thing over and over every time he took me down the Bayview, down the, you know, the Bayview River. So he showed me where he had placed her. So this is all later. Then the third one comes with Christian Prince. Now, he met her on the streetcar when he was doing the St. Clair streetcar ride, because he would do intermittently, I think, for about a month. He called them pieces of work that when he tallied up his rides or whatever, he did the route, because they had to fill out a form, the streetcar drivers. So when I first started, wiretapping myself and going through it, day by day, of what he said to me, and then putting everything in a journal, diary, right, of dates and times and everything. He had me go to where he picked up Christine Prince, and he would always say, go to where my previous nanny, Welsh nanny, I used to pick her up. Anyway, so he brought me to show me where he had taken her. But anyway, what he did was, on Sewell's Road, he brought me to the Sewell's Road near Rouge River, and he brought me to where he had dumped her body. So what was so important was what he had told me about the umbrella. He says, I was so put off, I threw out her wallet along the route, along the road to the Sewell's Road area. But he left the umbrella with his stupid fingerprints on, and that used to haunt him. Next one is Dalia Alejandro, fourth case there, September 26, 1982. He kidnapped this woman, showed me where he had kidnapped her from, and then her body was found 6 weeks later. So this is what I'm trying to do for York Regional, Toronto Police, the Windsor Police, the Ottawa Police, the Montreal Police, the Detroit Police. Jesus, like endless. Next one is Archibald McDougall. The day that he started going through the York Regional cold cases, he brought me to the area of, it's called the Hogs Hollow. It's a golf course area. And he had stabbed to death this caretaker at Loretto Abbey. This is like a private school. So he showed me the school and then showed me that whole hollow, Hogs Hollow area where there were sewers. And he took me to the sewer area, and lo and behold, I saw a shopping cart. And he said, I used to, get the shopping cart out and take the cadavers, and then a lot of the bodies he would put in the sewer or throw it just over into the Hogs Hollow area. No one even goes to clean that area, like taking the weeds away or whatever. I don't know how many cadavers are in that Hogs Hollow area. But anyway, he was found stabbed to death, this Archibald McDougall. He said to me that he met him at this pub just across the street from that area, a pub off the top of my head. I can't remember it, but anyway, it's where he used to hang out, and he used to, just like Tabinski, used to chat up these women behind a bar, and then he'd roll them for their wallet. There wasn't much money that he found in McDougal's wallet, he told me. Next one is Michael Kent, 6. There's another one that he had abducted. Kevin Clavel. Now, this is very important because this is Saturday, June the 18th, 1960. Kevin Clavel and Marion Bagshaw. The Bagshaws lived not far from where the Estonian children's camp is up at Jadora. And where my aunt had her cottage was not far from the Bagshaws. So Clyde had gone in there, and I overheard that they were going to shoot the Bagshaws. And lo and behold, I had taken a bicycle and was a witness of, hearing the shots go on in the house. And I hightailed it right out of there, but I knew that he had killed the Bagshaws there. Kevin Cadell and Marion Bagshaw. This is Saturday, June 18th, 1960. Then he talked about this old, Jewish butcher that ran this quality kosher meat right at the corner of Bathurst and Eglinton. And he said he killed him with that guy's own cleaver. And all he got out of that Jew's wallet was something like $25 or something. He told me like that. On and on and on. I mean, when you go through all of this, there's approximately 350 to 400 unsolved. These are all done predominantly by Clyde. And either, you know, his son, the earlier ones where my brother was involved with Dieter Sims. So I'm going through all of these. So this is what's so important. Now, here's where I've got a case where Clyde's oldest son, Paul, had done with the Camisos a Brinks robbery, killing a security guard, and this happened on Thursday, April 24th, 1980. And they were gunned down with a machine gun with a very well-planned robbery. Everything that they ever plan in a Brinks robbery, in a bank robbery or whatever, is cased out to a T. The getaway is highly important because they usually take a stolen car and take one or two and disappear from that whole area. But the robbery is highly planned, and that happened at 3850 Shepherd in Scarborough. So the other security guard was left wounded, but the composites drawings that wounded security guard had given show to a T the link between the Cosimo Elia Camiso of what he looks like with Clyde's cousin. They said the third man here, it says, was 5'5" to 5'8", stocky. That's the Camiso one. The other one, they said, was in his late 20s with a might to medium build. So the composites are what I found, and then what I'm presenting is Clyde's oldest son's photograph and compare it. Then you go into the next one is on Thursday, February the 10th, 1983, Philip Remington. Clyde showed me where in the area where I lived on, I lived at 200 Bell Oil, and this was 231 Bell Oil. He had killed in the garage area this Toronto Deputy Planning Commissioner, shot him with a .22 handgun. So he brought me to that area and showed me how he had cased that whole area and set him up. The next is Donald Gibson, killed there on July 18, 1971, where he had stolen some stuff. He said he didn't get much out of that guy. He'd do home invasions, all of them. Anyway, the next one, this is what he told me. Now, Detective Steve Ryan said that he had solved this case with this Donna Ann Projan. Now, Clyde started talking about this case to me. That was on Tuesday, June the 23rd, 1981. That the guy that he had actually pinned it on was a carpet sales guy. And Detective Sergeant Steve Ryan had put it in a solve case. But here's one where Clyde knew that no one would have access into her apartment except somebody had lived in that immediate area or had her key. Because the door was found locked. But anyway, that was, he said, another setup. I said, Jesus Christ, you can set up everyone and pin the DNA or blood or whatever from somebody else, and then they do the time, but you did the crime. And then the Claudia Gilbert, next one after that, Monday, July 12th, 1982, 22-year-old girl that was found at Leslie and Dundas, on face down on the floor. Clyde showed me where that happened. Next one is this Valios and Garris or whatever, November 4th, 1971, convenience store. Clyde never paid for a cigarette, so he'd go into doing these short little hauls in convenience stores where they grab the cigarettes and the haul in the till. Then he went on about this Michelle Gonzalez and whatever, the Calypso Hut. But anyway, this was another horrific one. Julianne Cox, 92. where he said he had strangled this whole lady with a clothes hanger garter. I said, you've got to be sick. Why would you kill these old ladies? Well, you know how much I hate my mother. So he would kill a lot of these old ladies because he hated his mother, calling her mental midget all the time. So it's kind of like a Norman Bates scenario where the son can't stand the mother, right? And kills the mother or whatever. So he doesn't kill his own mother, but he kills these little old ladies. 92. She's found murdered in her closet on Queen and Beach. That happened on Sunday, June 14th, 1970. Only 77 pounds. So, like, what a coward. He kills these kids, these little old ladies. Anyway, I went into this. The next one was the Cheryl Hanson. And I said it was done on this at this Bloomington side road. So the day that he tells me all this is he goes to have his, hernia operation. And I went to see that he wasn't, nothing was done to him because he said, I'm not going to be put under. I want you to check that I'm not alive. And I said, why don't you have your own family make sure that you're fine after the operation? Well, they want to kill me, yells, you know. They all want the money that I've made on these hits. They can't wait until I die. So anyway, I took a bus all the way to Steeles Avenue, and I didn't want to pay a second ticket because I thought, well, I'm just going to walk to this, it's called the Schuldeis Clinic, and they specialize in hernia operations. So it was a hot, hot summer day when I went in there, and that's when he started talking about this little girl, Cindy Williams. I had bought some grapes and cherries to bring to him, and I had given them, and when he started talking about this little girl wanted candy, I thought, Jesus Christ, why is he telling me this? It's the fact that I brought him a gift of cherries and grapes at this Longo's grocery store. But he had brought presents to this little girl, luring her to her death. I went ballistic. I was like, I was starting to yell at him, and then he had this cold-blooded look, and then he started taking me down this route. But anyway, he started telling this little girl, Cindy Williams, and then he started talking about the Cheryl Hanson. She's only seven years old, and you could see her picture. He called her Little Red Riding Hood. Now, her body has never been found, and Ply took me approximately where he had put her. Anyway, that's why I'm going through the York Regional. Then Simon Wilson, next one there, Wednesday, January 29th, 1975. They haven't really found him, and that's another one that Clyde showed me where he abducted him near his school, Parkfield Elementary. Oh, the other thing I'm going to interject, that when I had called you from the corner of Eglinton and Mount Pleasant, and Clyde was in this coffee shop called the Second Cup, kitty corner directly across from on the south west side of the Second Cup at Eglinton and Mount Pleasant is Clyde's oldest son's son from Jackie Bluestein, that married Paul's oldest son and had a child by the name of Joshua Forshaw. He's the Jewish kid. The kid goes to school at Eglinton Public School. That used to be the school that my sister went to. So that's why he hangs around that area, right in that coffee shop. He sees that kid probably at lunchtime or whatever. So I'm going to do another day. I'll just show you that day when I saw him, where I ran, where we used to live, where I saw him on 54 Brownlow, where we lived right after we lived 45 Marlboro, where he told me that he was going to kill Kennedy. Highly relevant, you know, all these areas. It's like same area, the same matrix that I can't climb out of very important information coming out and the links to all these cases. Anyway, I had to interject that because what bothered me that day is there's the high school that I went to, Northern, just down the street, and he cases these places for abducting these kids again. That makes me sick. Anyway, then next one is Simon Wilson, a 9-year-old kid that disappeared Wednesday, January 29th, 1975, walking to a school there, which I went to, never been found. Then Lisa Ainsley showed me right not far from where Lizzie Tomlinson was, almost in that same immediate area. He brought me in this area in the parking lot. It was a hostel, and it was 393 French Street East. So on Monday, May the 12th, 1997, he had killed this prostitute. And when I was in my teens, all they used to do was go nigger hunting, hooker hunting, fag hunting. You know, that's all they did. One cadaver after another was found. So the next case after Lisa Ainsley, where she was found in that hostel area, was Irwin Harrison Gilmore. And that was Tuesday, December 20th, 1983. 22. And she was murdered in her apartment just on the second floor at Hazleton. I was walking down that street that night, and I had seen Clyde with a balaclava. He took me to that area after one day we had gone to Windsor Arms Hotel. Clyde's son, Paul, used to work at the Windsor Arms. So he started talking about this, Aaron Harrison Gilmore. Her brother is the one that wants this case solved. Irwin was just about to marry Anthony Monk, which is the son of Peter Monk, the richest, gold companies. If you just Google Barrick Gold, you'll see that the principal is Peter Monk. And this girl was about to marry the girl. Anyway, they were partners in this Claritone company that went defunct. They pulled a bankruptcy, but they short-sold the stock and left the investors hanging. And I'm trying to build up the exact reason why the motive for Detective Sergeant Steve Ryan. Next one goes into Joseph Serrano, shot to death in a gas station that's not far from where Clyde lives there on Royal York Road, where he had his townhouse that he bought at Evans Avenue there at 28 James Stock Path is right, that whole area there where he lives. So all of these. Next one is this Kenneth John Worth, 17, shot to death. It's so detailed. It's hard for me to do this thing because what I have to do is chronologically, I'm going back actually to 1945, building up all the unsolved murders that Dubinsky had done, how he trained Clyde then into doing them, and how Clyde trained his kids into doing them. So Clyde's got 5 siblings. How many siblings the Dubinsky clan has got, that's what's very important for me to link into, because probably the Dubinsky son was groomed into being a contract killer as well. So let me just go into, skirt down to Larry Heinlein, that 33-year age. I'm not going to go on to all this, but it was a contract killing that Clyde had done there that he went into detail. I don't have my notes with me that I've gone into my computer there to go into my affidavit, but this is what was important in the year of 1959. 1959 was a very pivotal era of when I was trying to make inroads to go to a police officer. Just before, on March the 9th, 1959, Clyde had killed this little girl, Patricia Lupton, L-U-P-T-O-N. I haven't got to that area, but... And that same night, he had done a home invasion into a house where this lady by the name of Ida Jean Dean lived. Now, it was smeared onto a guy, another one, a patsy. This is where the developing of the patsies or the pattern of patsies I'm trying to link into, that he had said that smeared it on this kid because the kid was seen to go into the house, but they weren't. Now, Clyde vividly told me about the satin red pillow, that this woman had all kinds of money hidden in these in the kitchen area where she had put the tops of cereal boxes and then hidden her bills of money. And they couldn't find where it was. So Clyde said he took a, an ice pick and started stabbing her in the brain. She ended up dying with something like 33 ice pick wounds to the head and neck area. I mean, this is like horrific stuff that I had to live through, Clyde telling me, but how many times that... At the young age, I was at 12, living through him chasing me up and down with the machete, trying to lop my head off with all the guns that they ordered from those, that sprayed in the killing of a president, those order forms. They were the order forms that I'll never forget because I leafed through them all through them. They were like the yellow pages paper. You know, the yellow pages is the kind of like a very soft grade of yellow paper. Anyway, that's what he had, my brother had in his room. And I watched as they filled them out, and sometimes they got so tired they asked me to fill out these forms. They put alias names, they were underage ordering the stuff, and the stuff came all the way from California, Chicago, and that's how the man liquor Carcano was ordered. So I'm trying to link in to that stuff, that, you know, from the time of 59 to just shortly before 1963 when Kennedy was killed, but the time that they ordered that, and that was in the fall of 62, late fall, and the early part of 63. So the what I'm trying to link into the ordering of those guns that they did was the time that they started setting up Lee Harvey Oswald as a patsy. So this was very pivotal at that point because Patricia Lupton, they hightailed it out of the Toronto area, and in between that, my brother and Clyde had taken off to parts unknown. I had snuck in, taken the key off the, what do you call that area, just above a door jamb?
Yeah.
Anyway, he would put the key to his room because he locked up this room where all the guns were. And I told my mother, you have no comprehension. When you go to work and come back at 9, I'm chased up and down by, by the guns that he has, with the bayonets, with the machetes, and on and on. Anyway, my mother didn't believe me until I opened the door to show her. So I was witness to this little girl, Patricia Lupton, being kidnapped by Clyde. My brother and Clyde used to drive underage because they got... illegal car ID that they were made that they were older than they were. So they were already driving at the age of 14 and 16 cars. Unbelievable. Anyway, it goes right after approximately the same date now, on Friday, April the 10th. That happened on March the 9th, Patricia Lubkin. Catherine DeLuc was murdered with blunt instrument hitting her in the back of the head. What Clyde says, he used always the tire iron and hit her and then stole personal effects or money again. That's all he used, usually did these home invasions. And Clyde brought me to show me where she lived on Hastings. It's right down at Queen and Hastings. So I've mapped out all these areas. So this is highly important because the way they, whoever Web Sleuths has done this, they've just put all the stuff in, not chronologically. Nothing is, you know, is detailed. And Kai told me a lot of stuff that no one would know except the killer that's not on any website except, you know, information that I'm saying that no one would know. This information except the killer. So they just sort of put the missing pieces, you know, the key pieces, but they haven't put anything in detail. The next one is a 69-year-old widow. Clyde said he met her. She ran this country-style donut restaurant. He brought me to this restaurant on Bloor Street and showed me where he had kill this woman because she had quite a bit of money and she lived on Vaughan Street. Showed me where he had gotten in through Bathurst and Vaughan on the 18th floor, and she was a Hungarian who ran also a boarding house, but he figured that she got a lot of money. That's why he wanted into her house and to steal what she had in the house. Next one is Della Adriangio. I think that was the first one that we had gotten into. But anyway, they start on this forum, they start talking amongst each other just like they do on the education forum on the JFK. Let me go ahead. Next is Graham Pierce. My thing flipped up too quickly. Graham Pierce. Okay, that's not far from that area where the streetcars are parked as the depot. Who went there, too, was Judith Ferry Baker, and that was just up the street at 35 High Park. This guy was a fag. When I had met Clyde a few times, and my brother used to take me to this Parkside Tavern. I also went into Parkside Tavern just at the same time as Richard Hovey and Eric Jones were killed. I went into the Parkside Tavern with Charles Frederick Rogers. Clyde and my brother used to fag hunt at the Parkside. That was a known homosexual hangout. It was a gay bar. And it was on the second floor, this bar, but all these fags would come in where they would start stalking the fag or whatever who was going to be the victim for the night, found, you know, chatted him up just like he would chat at a bar and then kill him. Anyway, they killed Clyde at this Graham Pierce 36, and that was in Sunday, March the 20th, 1983, and who found him was a roommate or whatever, found the body. So Clyde showed me where the High Park, I knew already where the Parkside Tavern was, so I'm putting all these maps. It's so extensive, like you wouldn't believe where this goes on and on and on. Anyway, next one, September the 15th, 1974, Suzanne Miller. She died of blows to the head. She was found Saturday, October the 12th of that same year in Thorndale. So It's not far from London. And this is where, at the time that Richard Nixon was going to be impeached, Clyde started targeting kid after kid, because the links to why they did the Watergate link into who the assassins were as well. That's why everything is sealed, and I think that Robert Lakey or whatever know how lethal this information is. Because can you imagine this comes out? Not only was a contract killer stalking his victims on the streetcar, the fact that he had gotten his job by demanding a major amount of money from the commissioner of the TTC, Mr. Dale, I'll go into Clarence Dale. Clyde called him and started a series of bombings on the TTC. He had to fork up this money. This Clarence Day lived in Rosedale, and Clyde called him from various phone booths trying to extort money from him. But he ends up working at the TTC. What a perfect cover. Imagine getting the government on a kind of a catch-22 situation where no one wants to admit that there's been a major player in organized crime doing hits, but doing hits, you know, killing people at random, just for their, you know, whatever they've got on their person. Anyway, I don't know if you want to listen to any more. It just goes on and on. That to what I said, Laura Lee Browse. They haven't put, Steve Ryan hasn't gone into the Patricia Lupkin. They didn't go back into the earlier cases where Tabinski had done these. But anyway, that day that he started telling me about the kids there at the Scholdeis Clinic, he brought me up to show me where he had put Marie Woods, 33-year-old mother. She vanished September the 21st, 1981. Clyde said he left her station wagon abandoned October the 5th at the Scarborough Town Center. He brought me up to the area where her body, where he left her body. It's along a very sort of remote, well, not really remote area, but it's an area where not a lot of houses are, and it was a very wet, soggy area where her body was, and he showed me where he threw it out and put her alongside the road there. So that date, he showed me a lot of the York Regional unsolved murders. So Marie Woods is one of the unsolved in the York Regional area. And then goes the Lloyd Larksforth, John McCormick. This is 1981. They haven't solved that one. That's another one that Clyde had done. Next one is Valerie Karen Stevens, and that was 19. Her remains were found October the 22nd, 1992, way out of Toronto area. They couldn't figure out what she died of, but a lot of the hookers, he just used a tire iron to kill them. Blunt force trauma. Next one is this Lillian Dunsmore, the same. He killed her on Gloucester Street, brought me to show me where her rooming house was, then started talking about this Julie Forte. Now, I started believing that was maybe Clyde's first wife, Julie Grifoni, but it isn't. This was just an 18-year-old high school girl when he got into the nitty-gritty of it. And again, she went missing, and then her ID was found there, running shoes, school, but the dump site. They keep on putting false leads. They would start scouring for any pedophile or any kind of person in that area. Where it was waylaid all the time is if Clyde did too many hits in the immediate area of Toronto or Newmarket or the Durham area, he'd move out higher to places in the remote area like Haileybury. I couldn't believe finding this Haileybury. Now, he would make an annual pilgrim always to see the relatives, the Dubinsky relatives on the mother's side in Winnipeg. So that's why along the route he'd kill, you know, women or children who'd, you know, be just walking on the street by themselves at you know, with no adult supervision. Easy prey. Anyway, it goes into the next one there. I'm skipping over there to Monday, March the 6th, 1989, where he had gotten into that Harold and Florence Fagan. And they, Clyde said he shot them to death. And he had gone in with the same group there. It's usually, it was at that particular time was Clyde's oldest son, Paul, Vladimir, and himself doing these. If there were more than two or three people, like he'd do some of the hits by himself, but usually always needed a second person to hold the person down. So when Detective Sergeant Tony Smith thought, oh yeah, we've got the DNA, it's like one person going in there. I said, like, are you kidding me? What he would do is find some hooker, you know, place where jocks would always be, like, there's certain spots in Toronto where a lot of the hookers would go to, and then they would discard these condoms. So Clyde used to pick up these John sperm in the condom. Smart cookie, I'll tell you what he does. And then he'd plant that sperm that was still in the condom, and he'd leave it on the cadaver. So I said to Detective Sargent, Steve Ryan, you got the same DNA with the Susan Tice and the Aaron Harrison Gilmore. I said, are you kidding me? You might have nothing. You couldn't even trace this DNA of who it belonged to. Clyde sets up these guys. Anyway, he said what he had done was lured this guy saying he's going to give him some money, and this guy had a concession at Canadian National Exhibition. So he did some phone calls all the time to the house, setting the prey up. Anyway, they were very prominent members of the Jewish community, so that was another Jew kill, as he would call it. Then this February the 2nd, 1973, Cherry, I'll spell the last name, B-L-U-N-D-E-L-L. This was way back in the early period of after the 60s and 70s. He said he did a hit and run killing this little girl. Then Margaret Sidone, she was killed there. That was that actually was another mob hit. She lived on Highbury Road, and that happened Tuesday, June the 6th, 1989. And she died. The police thought of smoke inhalation, but the cops finally said it was a homicide. And I went into detail. I don't have my affidavit in front of me of what transpired there. Then these are the ones that really pissed me off about Steve Ryan. He arrested a guy by the name of Peter Dale McDonald, and they dropped the case on this guy because these were done by Clyde. 23-year-old Julianne Middleton. Clyde brought me to show a sunny side park. In that area, there were a pool that when I was a kid of 10 years old, my dad and my brother and I would go swimming in this pool area, so at Sunnyside. So Clyde brought me and showed me where he had dumped this Julianne Middleton. it's not far from Parkside and Lakeshore. So this is a place where Clyde had done this bank robbery at the same Lakeshore and Parkside. And they haven't solved that, and he's got a get-up that I was going to show you all the different, you know, the ball cap hats or the Andy cap. You know, remember I told you when I called you from that at the corner of Mount Pleasant and Eglinton? I said he had an Andy cap hat on, but he looked very much like that guy, that what I've told you, this John Bequia or whatever, playing on his computer there. And that's the way he has. Different get-ups. He'll have a mustache, a beard growth. Puts on... and Darlene McClain, they were all found. Where he picked up a lot of these hookers was right in this Coffee Time coffee shop, right kitty corner to where the streetcar depot is. Anyway, we'll leave it. Maybe I've inundated you too much there. Or maybe I'll just leave it off at this Kelly Brown Beck, 14-year-old. Her throat was slit Monday, October 19, 1987. And Clyde brought me up to this Yorkland Boulevard and showed me that place. It was right near where this police building was. And it's like saying to the cops, I can leave cadavers off right where you even work, and you won't even, you know, take it anywhere. Anyway, the next one here, I'll just leave. I shouldn't. Frank Arnetta. This is on Sinclair. He parked his car right in front of where this guy's office was, House of an Accounting. Was shot to death at his firm there. On and on and on. Most everyone in this website, which I said, this WebSleuth forum, is all done by Clyde, his oldest son, and now the latest ones is with Alfie. Imagine you having Alfred now, the latest generation of serial killer, contract killers, leaving you an email. Oh, my dad didn't do it. We didn't do it. Haley's off her rocker. Jesus Christ. I mean, why would I know details that I haven't even gone into on all these cases? Only the killer would know, right? Am I the killer? Or are they the killer? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Anyway, I just wanted to knock your socks off.
You do that every time we talk.
And what I'm building up is to show how the profile, and when I spoke to Robert Galen Ross, he was so excited, you know, when I said, you named your book right, The Elite Serial Killers, how they become part of Operation 40, Interpen group are done. Now, Clyde is probably, I wanted to tell you another thing that hit me in the head. Some guy is putting a comprehensive book together on the who's who of JFK. It's like a logging in of all the names of all these people. And I bet you he's in email contact with the author, unbeknownst to him, that he's talking to the real assassin. Yeah. The assassins of the JFK. Unbelievable! Unbelievable! Anyway, so... Anyway, I thought I got to tell you all this stuff because what you have to be is a witness to my giving the affidavit. I want to put this on a situation where Robert Blakey has to deal with it because it's he's not part of the, he's a professor now. He was still part of a team.
He's part of the cover-up, though, Haley.
I realize that, and that's why he sends me an email, I didn't get your attachment. Well, I'm going to make sure he gets it, because I want to put them in the catch-22 situation. Hey, you bastards, cover-up bastard, you better deal with it, because, you know, well, if the public at large would know what transpired there in the cover-up, they would do a mass onslaught on Washington, D.C.
Yeah,
you get my drift here?
Yeah, it's a great idea, Haley.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is why I take my hat off to the work that you and Kevin Barrett are doing. Kevin Barrett wants all these people to show up there on 9/11. What I want to see is 6 million people yelling on JFK's anniversary. I'm not going to take it anymore. Is that Movie the Network? I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Imagine if 6 million people show up. Why the significance of the 6 million is that lousy Holocaust, you know, the Holocaust hoax. Hollow hoax.
Haley, I gotta go.
Yeah, gotta go. But anyway, I just wanted to go into this very important stuff.
Have
a great day, and I'm going to just
do some
more errands, and then I've got to start now putting this together. I've got to formulate, you know, a plan of attack. And you guys are doing, I wanted to honor you. I'm so proud of what you've done in your articles on Veterans Today. They're historic, James. Historic. I've never seen a person as gung-ho to try to bring the truth into the limelight of the American public to wake up. So I thank you with all my heart that you're doing
dear.
This.
You're a dear.
Yeah. So anyway, just take it easy there and keep on plugging.
Yeah,
anyway,
I'm going
to read
your
latest article. I didn't even get into it.
Okay,
Aaron. So have a great day.
You too, Haley. Thanks.
Yeah.
Bye now. Bye. Be safe. Bye.